Welcome to What a Creep, the show with Margot Donahue and Sonia Mansfield talking about creeps from the past to the present.
This is your quick guide to the biggest creeps, jerks, assholes, and losers, the best of the worst.
From two nice ladies who want the world to be a little less creepy. Welcome back to What a Creep. This is Margot Donahue and my cohort in creepitude, as always, the amazing Sonia Mansfield. Hey, Sonia.
Hello, my friend.
Hello, my friend. Hopefully three strikes means we're not out. We have decided to take a break this week. And we had a creep on deck, but I wanted some extra time to work on that. And I just realized it's the middle of summer. We haven't taken a break since December. So we're going to replay our episode about Bryan Singer because we spoke about him in January and then new allegations came to light this week. And did you want to talk a bit about that?
Sure. One of his victims named Elijah Daniel has resurfaced and he's kind of raising his hand being like, remember me? This was something that really happened. And Bryan Singer hasn't really paid any consequences for what he did. He's a huge sexual abuser, like, and it's right. Like a well-known thing, and it's been going on for years, and I don't know if maybe people weren't ready to deal with it back then, but they're ready to deal with it now, so it's back in the news. It feels, and all the allegations that are coming out are things that we talk about in our episodes, so it's very timely to re-release it and refresh people's memories.
And by the way, if it sounds a little different than normal, it's because we're recording this. They record the Dorking Out show, which we're also taking a break from Dorking Out this week. But we will be replaying our Joel Schumacher episode about St. Elmo's fire. But in the meantime, we still have creeps in the news. And we thought we'd just say, hi, we're just going to replay this and talk to you later. And then the creeps today just started creeping all over the place. So Ghislaine Maxwell, she was BFFs with Jeffrey Epstein. She was captured by the FBI in, of all places, not Monte Carlo, not in Rio, not at her penthouse in London. She was in New Hampshire.
She didn't go very far.
No, it's lovely in the summertime, let me just say. But I mean, a little humid and too many mosquitoes for me, but you do you, boo. So she's been captured. Alan Dershowitz, the lawyer Alan Dershowitz, he was going crazy the last few days on Twitter and people were wondering what was going on. I think this is what's going on.
Yes, I think so.
We talked about Alan Dershowitz in a past episode. Yeah. So so that happened today. Yesterday, there was a story about Joss Whedon and it was Ray Fisher. Is that the actor?
That is correct.
And it was for the Justice League yes. movie. And Zach... Zack Snyder was supposed to direct, and then he had a tragedy in his family. And so Joss Whedon took over. And apparently the cast and crew said that he was a complete jerk. And Ray kept it to himself for as long as he could, but he's finally like, I've had it. This guy was an asshole. And then once he got that out there, women came onto the timeline and said, Joss Whedon's been an asshole for a long time.
Oh, yes.
He's been a total creep. And so a lot of you guys reached out to us on Facebook and Twitter. Are you guys going to cover this? Joss Whedon? Absolutely, we will. He is definitely on the list.
Most
is it going to be right away? Yeah. Is it going to be right away or a month from now? We're very fickle. But it will be happening.
Our list is ever changing. It really is. But he's also, I think, a good candidate for an episode that people are floating or have been floating in our Facebook group about people like creeps who are huge disappointments. Not that like all creeps aren't huge disappointments. They are. But like there's some like Joss Whedon or Christy Swanson or Jake. Huh?
Did I say Josh or Joss?
You said Joss.
Joss is Joss Stone. Josh is his name, right? Or is his name Joss Whedon?
It's Joss Whedon. You had it right. You're right.
Oh, God. Okay.
So him, Christy Swanson, J.K. Rowling, like these are people that like when you discover their creeps, you're like, oh, that fucking sucks, man. Like, and that
it bums you out.
Yeah. He's a good contender for that one.
So definitely that will be in the future. But in the meantime, we just wanted to take a little bit of a break. We will be back next week we're going to have a new Patreon episode. We'll have a new creep episode. I think it's going to be an old Hollywood creep. You guys seem to like those. He's more of a big entertainer, actually.
Yeah.
More of a superstar. So that should be, it's fun. It might be a long one, but it's going to be fun. So follow us on all the things. Creep Pod on Twitter. What a Creep podcast group. We have a private group on Facebook. That's really the best place to interact with us. So do that if you want, join that. And if you don't look like a juggalo in your profile picture on Facebook, or if you belong to some really funky, weird groups and they show us what groups you belong to, you're probably not going to join us. But if you're a normal person, it's a great place to come and hang out. Feel free to send us an email, whatacreeppodcast@gmail.com. If you would like some stickers, or you just have some guest suggestions, or whatever, you just want to say hi. We always enjoy that.
Yeah, we do.
We do. If you get us through Apple Podcasts, if you could leave us 5 stars and a review, that'd be amazing. It helps us find our people and grow our show. We just want to keep showing and growing, don't we? And also, what did I forget? Patreon. We have special goodies for you guys in Patreon. We are getting our store up and together.
Yeah.
It's dope.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
And we're going to have a July newsletter. The monthly newsletters are returning as promised.
And so we're also getting bumper stickers. Like, we're getting crazy, y'all. So just wait for summer. So let us have this week to take a little extra time. And we'll be back with a new episode next week. But right now we're going to replay our episode about Bryan Singer. And if memory serves, this was a really intense episode.
Yes. Yes. I was going to mention that too. This one talks a lot about child sexual abuse. So if... you know, just keep that in mind. Take care of yourself. If that's not something you're in a space to hear, you skip this one.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
it's weird. Like, how do you enter? Then you're like, enjoy. Like, it's like not the right word.
No. But I just think of Powers Booth and Tombstone.
Yeah.
I just kind of say, like, well, bye.
And we talked about iTunes, we talked about Patreon, we talked about stickers. Sonia, I think we're ready to just get on with the show.
All right. Are you ready for this creep?
Are you ready to rock?
Are you ready to rock? How are you doing, Brooklyn? This is my... Go ahead.
I was just going to say, we could say that because he directed the Queen movie. So there you go.
There you go. This is what I'm calling my part two in a series of creeps who worked on X-Men movies. Today, I'm talking about producer-director Bryan Singer. Bryan Singer's films include 4 X-Men movies, The Usual Suspects, Apt Pupil, Valkyrie starring Tom Cruise, and Superman Returns. And most recently, he did Bohemian Rhapsody, but he got fired 3 weeks before filming completed. His movies have earned more than $3 billion at the box office. And that's made him an insanely popular director, which is probably why he was able to get away with being a serious creep for a long time. He's been accused of multiple sexual assaults over the past 20 years, and Hollywood is only recently starting acknowledging it. He kind of got swept up in the Me Too stuff, even though a lot of these stories were common knowledge. Put this episode together with a little help from my friends at Deadline, Vox, Bryan Singer's own Instagram, NotableBiographies.com, DuncanRoy.com, Wikipedia, and the most important one, and this is a big special shout out to The Atlantic. They did a very detailed article written by Alex Potter and Maximilian French. They actually wrote the story for Esquire, and then Esquire pulled the plug on it because it was kind of like one of those catch and kill situations, much like Ronan Farrow and NBC and his story on Harvey Weinstein. They just didn't want to get involved, basically. So they took the story to The Atlantic. Potter and French brought the story to The Atlantic. It went through their legal vetting process and fact-checking process. They spent a year investigating allegations and lawsuits against Singer. They spoke with 50 sources, including 4 men who've never told their stories to reporters before.
Wow.
So special shout out, and all of our links to these sources are in the show notes. Definitely check them out. So let's start at the beginning. Bryan Singer was born on September 17th, 1965 in New York City. He is adopted. He was adopted by Grace Snyden. She was an environmental activist, and Norbert. I didn't know there was actual people named Norbert, but here we go. Norbert Dave Singer. And he was just a corporate executive. But his cousins are the Beastmaster himself, Mark Singer, and Laurie Singer from Footloose.
No way.
I didn't know that.
I didn't know that. Wow. My voice is cracking. Wow.
Oh, Beastmaster.
Laurie Singer. She's a cellist, too. Fun fact.
You learned something today. So he grew up in a Jewish household in West Windsor Township, New Jersey. You're a Jersey girl.
Yep.
Do you know where that is?
Nope.
Okay. Apparently, mostly it's a Catholic neighborhood. And Bryan Singer is Jewish and gay, so he didn't really fit in. Mm. At an early age, he knew he wanted to be a filmmaker. He wanted to be the next Spielberg. Don't they all? And just like Spielberg, he started making 8mm films with his friends when he was 12 years old. They made a little movie called The Star Trek Murders, which, I don't know, I would totally watch. Actually, sounds really good. One of his childhood friends was Christopher McQuarrie, who would actually go on to win Oscars. He won an Oscar for his screenplay for The Usual Suspects, and he directs Mission Impossible movies. He did Fallout and Rogue Nation, and those movies are fucking rad as hell.
Oh, FYI. Absolutely.
They made little home movies together, and one of them starred their friend, Ethan Hawke.
Wow.
I did not know that either. He went on to study filmmaking for 2 years at the School of Visual Arts in New York, and later transferred to the School of Cinematic Arts in Los Angeles. And he made a short film for $15,000 called Lion's Den that starred Ethan Hawke. And that film was so good that it got him financing for his first feature called Public Access, which I guess is kind of a low budget thriller, but it actually won a grand jury prize in 1993 at the Sundance Film Festival. And all of that is what led him to The Usual Suspects, which is really the one that put him on the map. And I'm sure you've seen The Usual Suspects.
Many times.
Me too. It came out in 1995. If you haven't seen it, it's really good. I hate recommending our movies by our creeps.
Right.
But a lot of other people work on it, and it is actually really good. But it does star some other creeps, too, like Kevin Spacey and Stephen Baldwin. So sorry about that, you guys, but it's good. Although I did want to note Roger Ebert really hated it and only gave it 1.5 stars out of 4. He said it was confusing and uninteresting.
Uninteresting. That's the part that gets to me, because it's interesting. You could say it's confusing or it doesn't make sense, but
yes,
uninteresting.
I know. Weird. Because I thought it was really, really good. And I've seen it a few times. I think I used to own it on VHS. It won 2 Academy Awards, including one for Christopher McQuarrie's screenplay and one for Best Supporting Actor for Kevin Spacey. Future, what a creep contender, Kevin Spacey. So it was also during this time that Singer, who at that point is in his 30s, was also getting like a reputation on the gay Hollywood scene. He often threw these really huge pool parties at his house. And a friend of Singer's told The Atlantic that he was shocked by how many of the guests were at the party that were like, they looked really young, like really young. And he said it felt like a high school party. And he remembers wondering, how did all these boys get here, and where are their parents? According to The Atlantic, one of the boys at the party was then 17-year-old Ben. And in this article in The Atlantic, they changed a lot of the names to respect their privacy. They're all very afraid of retaliation, as they should be, because despite what people think, nobody wants that sweet, sweet rape fame.
Right. We've talked about that.
We don't want it.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, these poor guys. His parents had kicked him out when he was 16. This happens a lot, by the way. A lot of, you know, young men come out to their parents, and then their parents are like, get the fuck out, and kick them out. And they end up on the streets, and a lot of them have to, like, they rely on like older gay men to help them. And sometimes the men take advantage. Mm-hmm. Not, and it's not all, by the way, we're not saying all. It's just some. He said, so he got kicked out and he was just passed around by the adult men in Singer's social circle. Mm. He said he had oral sex with Singer when he was 17. And remember, at this point, Singer would be in his 30s. Mm. Ben said that he would stick his hands down your pants without consent. He was predatory in that he would ply people with alcohol and drugs and then have sex with them. So after the success of Usual Suspects, Stephen King really wanted Bryan Singer to direct his story Apt Pupil. He actually sold the story to Singer for $1. Did you see Apt Pupil?
Oh yeah, that's so it's based on the Stephen King novella called Different Seasons, and mm-hmm. from that we got Rita Hayworth and the Shawshank Redemption, which became the Shawshank Redemption. We have The Body, which became Stand By Me, and then there's mm-hmm. another. So there's four stories, and they're all represented different seasons. And there's one called The Breathing Method, which is such a creepy, scary read that I threw it across the room like it was possessed when I first read it.
Oh my
God.
When
I was a teenager. Yeah. And that's going to, everything Stephen King's going to be a series, by the way. But anyway, it was a very, yes. very, very, his books in the 80s sold very, very well. I mean, he still is a big, anyway. Yes, I've heard of it. Being
yes.
my point.
I have not seen the movie, actually, but I know it stars Ian McKellen and Brad Renfro. Mm-hmm. And McKellen's like a former Nazi and Renfro's his neighbor who threatens to expose him unless he tells him about like everything he did. So I know what it's about. But once again, I haven't really seen it. So Brad Renfro at this time is 15 years old. And so he's playing like a high school student. They filmed a lot of the movie at a middle school in Northeast Los Angeles. This was spring of 1997. And there's a scene in the movie where Renfro's character is like taking a shower in the school's locker room. And then it like kind of turns into these like images of Jews in a gas chamber, apparently. Once again, haven't seen the movie. But the shower scene is what we're going to talk about here. So at least five boys between the ages of 14 and 17 who were in the scene filed a series of lawsuits against Bryan Singer and the production, including unlawful sexual harassment, invasion of privacy, and intentional infliction of emotional distress.
Oh my God.
They claimed the crew bullied them into getting naked for the scene.
This happens a lot in movies.
Yeah. So the Los Angeles County District Attorney didn't press any criminal charges, but a lot of the lawsuits were settled for an undisclosed sum. Mm-hmm. But they all had to sign confidentiality agreements.
NDAs.
Mm-hmm. These will pop up a lot on our show, and I think they come up again in this story as well. But while all this was going on, there was a seventh grader named Victor Valadinos, who was 13. He wasn't one of the boys in the lawsuit, but Victor told The Atlantic that one afternoon after back to basketball practice, he was using the restroom, and he was just like standing at the urinal, and he felt like somebody was watching him. And he turned around and Bryan Singer was there, and Bryan Singer kind of like looked him up and down and said, "You are so good looking. What are you doing tomorrow? Maybe I could have someone contact you about putting you in this movie." So Victor reported to the set, and it was during the filming of that locker room scene. And Victor was asked to get naked and put on a towel. Once again, 13 years old. Then Singer walked on set and he took Victor to like a secluded area off the set. And he said, "Just hang out here because it's going to be all day." He's like, "Don't worry." And would leave. And then he would keep coming back to Victor. And he like did it a few times. So he would like film a little bit. And then he would like come back to Victor. And then finally, according to Victor, Singer reached around through the towel flaps and grabbed his penis, started masturbating him. And then the director also like rubbed himself on the boy. And he did it all with a smile.
Ugh.
And that he kept saying, "You're so good looking. I really want to work with you." And then said stuff like, "I have a nice Ferrari. I'm going to take care of you." I'm like, "Yeah, poor kid." He said he was frozen and speechless.
Yeah.
And he came back to where I was in the locker room throughout the day to molest me.
Oh, Jesus.
I know. And he said, "I thought about going public, but he's like, who would believe me?"
Right.
It's so awful. I feel so bad for him.
Yeah.
And by the way, in the story in The Atlantic, they go deeper into what it was like for these kids after what happened to them. It's really, really well done. So once again, I highly recommend it because it talks a lot about the trauma of sexual abuse mm-hmm. as well. So after Bryan Singer finished directing Apt Pupil, He invested in this startup production company called Digital Entertainment Network, and it was going to focus on producing TV shows for movies for like for younger people, like 14 to 24. And it was going to have an emphasis on stories for gay teens and distribute them online. Awesome idea. The company was run by this man named Mark Collins Rector and his business partner slash lover, Chad Shackley. So Shackley was 16 when he started dating Collins Rector, who would have been about 32 at the time.
Oh, my God.
This is just a reoccurring thing that is happening here. All of these people in Bryan Singer's life are all like older gay men with like considerably younger lovers, some legal, some not. This production company also had some big corporate sponsors too. I feel like I should mention them. So it's like Microsoft, NBC, Dell, Chase Capital. Collins, Rector, and Shackley moved the company to a mansion in Encino, and they actually brought in this third person to help them, and his name is Brock Pierce, and he was a 17-year-old actor who had been in the Mighty Ducks movies, and I think maybe he might have been someone who like kind of helped them like recruit some of these younger boys. The Encino mansion became like this huge party house, and it was just packed with like teenage boys all the time, and they were allegedly given alcohol and drugs. They were encouraged to have sex with older men, and in some cases raped. And Singer was a regular visitor there. According to The Atlantic, one early senior level employee of Digital Entertainment Network, which they called Den, remembers asking why so many teenage boys were on the payroll, and they were told that they did computer work. They were also told a story about attending a company party and seeing all these teenage boys filing into a movie theater. And when the employee tried to go in too, they were stopped by a bodyguard and said this was only for the kids. And then he found out later that they were just showing porn in there.
Ugh.
I know. It's so gross. You know what these stories remind me of? They remind me of the stories that Corey Feldman used to tell, and no one would believe him, by the way.
Yeah.
Like, it's awful. It was at a Den party that then 14-year-old Andy, once again, not real names, first met Bryan Singer. According to Andy's account, he started hanging around all these parties in 1997. During the spring break of his freshman year in high school, he started chatting online with Collins Rector, who at that point now was 37. I'm like, he's 14. What do 14-year-olds talk about with 37-year-olds? Eventually, Collins Rector sent a car to pick up Andy, and they had sex. Once again, Andy's 14. Soon after, he met Singer at a party, and then they had sex. Singer knew that at this point, Andy was 15. Singer was 31.
Oh, God.
And Andy told The Atlantic that the first time he had sex with Singer, this is really sad, Brad Renfro was in the room. He was 15.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And that according to two sources, Singer would sometimes refer to Renfro as his boyfriend.
Wow.
Yeah. And in case you guys don't know, Brad Renfro died of a drug overdose in 2008. He was 25. And he had a lot of problems.
Yeah. God, he started in The Client. That was the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, with Susan Sarandon. I love that movie. And he's so good in it.
Yeah.
But I remember the press around that time. Like, he had kind of a rough past, you know, and that's what it kind of brought to the character. Yeah. But, you know, you thought, like, maybe getting a career in acting would give him a good, you know, good standing, good you know, step up in the world.
Yes.
But unfortunately, I think he had his demons, and, you know, could have been Bryan Singer could have been part of that. Oy.
Yeah. Bryan Singer could have been one of his demons. It's really sad. This gentleman, Andy, said that Renfro didn't like get involved. He was like sitting next to the bed, like watching. And then he said, I don't think Brad was gay or even bi. I think he was just going with the flow. And he said that they actually talked about it. And he said, like me, he looked around at all the things these guys had, all of the money. And maybe he thought these guys were going to do things for him.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
So I think he was probably just looking for, you know, something that these people were just taking advantage of. It was really sad. I was so sad when I read that part. He was super talented.
Mm-hmm.
He was in Ghost World, too.
Yeah.
So another boy that Singer took advantage of was this boy named Eric, once again, not real name, who was 17. He went to parties at the mansion too, and he said he was passed around like a party favor. he now works as an executive at a film production company. And he said he met Singer at a party at the director's house. They were flirting in a hot tub. And the boy, Eric, said, "Just so you know, I'm 17. And Brian Singer said, "Just so you know, I'm 31. They had sex that night. And he said that he and Singer had sex on and off for about 5 years into Eric's 20s. But then Singer lost interest. And I'm like, yeah, because he got too old, right? He's like,
right,
in his
aged
20s.
Out.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Ooh. Right. Eric says now he goes to regular Alcoholics Anonymous meetings, and that he will often meet other men there who have their own stories about Singer. And he said, "There's a bunch of us. It's like, you were one of Singer's boys? Me too."
Oh my God.
I know.
That's like the shittiest club to be a part of. I mean,
such a shitty club.
I mean, it's good that you're not the only member for sure. Like, you have people with you, but still, like, good God. Yeah. What a thing to bond over.
I know. It's really scary. All the stuff is so scary because you're going to see there's like even more. So some of the people in Singer's orbit have been arrested and charged with various sexual misconduct crimes. I don't want to get into like a ton of it because then the show would just be too long. But I did want to mention in August 2000, a federal grand jury actually indicted Mark Collins Rector on charges related to transporting a minor across state lines for sex. But then he fled the country. He was arrested in Spain. And there they found in his villa, he had like a huge like collection of weapons, and he had over 8,000 images of child pornography.
Ugh.
Yeah, I know. He was held in a Spanish jail for a year, and then he was charged. Then they transported him back to the United States, where he was sentenced to, this is great, 3 years of court supervision, and is now a registered sex offender.
Ay, ay, ay.
It's a slap on the wrist.
Yeah.
It's like nothing. Here, report to the courthouse like every once in a while and let us know you're still alive. It's bullshit. Another lawsuit was filed against Singer and a Hollywood producer friend of his named Gary Godard. Do you know Gary Godard?
No.
I didn't hear of him before this, but he's some Hollywood producer. And this lawsuit stated that in 2003, Godard started a relationship with someone over social media. The plaintiff was 14 years old, living with his parents in London. The boy claimed that he had sex with Godard in London when he was 16, which is the age of consent in UK. Mm-hmm. But in 2006, Godard introduced the boy to Singer. And according to the complaint, Singer brought him to a VIP party after the screening of Superman Returns. He offered the boy a quaalude, which he declined. Later, Singer gave the boy a drink that fucked him up because he drugged him. And then he brought him to a hotel where Godard was. And then once in the bedroom, they raped him. And there's a lot of details, and I don't think I want to get into them, to be honest. But it's unfortunate. They raped him.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. The lawsuit against Singer and Godard was dismissed because rape is very hard to prove. Sadly, it shouldn't be. I don't know why we don't believe people when they say this. But in 2017, Godard faced a fresh bunch of allegations because actor Anthony Edwards, do you remember this?
Yeah.
Came out with like seven other former child actors and accused him of sexual abuse.
Good for him, by the way.
Yeah, I know. It's not something you want to come out and talk about in a public way. And he did it anyway. And I think that that's awesome of him. And I think we should talk about that in a bonus episode or something someday, because there's a lot to dig into there. And I totally went down the rabbit hole. that. So let's talk about another lawsuit. In 2014, Michael Egan filed a lawsuit, alleged that Singer was part of a group of powerful entertainment executives who maintained and exploited boys in a sordid sex ring. He is not wrong. Egan also sued three other men who had been affiliated with the digital entertainment network. He alleged that Collins Rector had passed him to Singer for a sex act and that Singer had abused him during two trips to Hawaii. Egan also alleged that, yes, Singer raped him multiple times on that trip. It named Gary Godard again, and then some executives from like Den, another one who had left his job as president of Walt Disney Television to work at Den. It's really it's people who are really high up. It's bananas. Mm. These stories are like, and a lot of them are like comment. This is 2014. Like, and we didn't hear about it until like 2017. This is insane. But during the pretrial discovery, there was a lot of inconsistencies with Egan's story. Also, this is super common, by the way, when people come forward. It's hard, these things are hard to talk about. Mm-hmm. You know, anyway, his that happened. So there were these inconsistencies, and also he led a shitty, like, fucked up life, and he was involved in some Ponzi scheme, and so he got hit with some criminal, like, fraud charges, and because of this, like, the media was just like, he's a liar and a con man. Even though there's really a lot of reasons to believe him, he was a regular at the mansion. He appeared in a lot of those Dan projects. He took a polygraph test. He was interviewed by a psychiatrist who found him credible. The lawsuit didn't go forward, but Singer did agree to pay him a $100,000 settlement.
Oh, wow.
Which Egan rejected because Singer wanted him to sign a non-disclosure agreement.
Oh, good for him.
Yeah. So Egan was like, fuck you.
Right.
I'm not signing your NDA. We should get t-shirts made that say, don't sign the NDA. Just say no to NDA. Don't do it, you guys. So while the Egan case was happening, Singer was involved with 18-year-old Brett Tyler Skopak. Once again, 18 is legal age. So nothing, you know, just kind of creepy, but not illegal. They met at a Halloween party. A month later, Singer called him, invited him to a friend's birthday dinner. And then Tyler says that after dinner, Brian Singer, him, and several others went back to Singer's house where they all took the party drug Molly. I felt like an old person just saying that. You know, the party drug, Molly.
Ecstasy, yes.
Yes. I didn't want to say, like, they all took Molly and then people are like, who's Molly? I wanted to make sure that people knew what it was. But then when I said it out loud, I'm like, the party drug Molly, the Molly. They took the Molly and they went to Brian's bedroom, and it was just a big old fucking orgy, basically. Once again, not illegal, but just a little sign of maybe what Brian Singer's life is like. Brett also told The Atlantic that, or actually, I'm sorry, he told this to Deadline. My apologies. Brett told this to Deadline that Brian Singer could get pretty much anyone he wanted, like, into bed, which is really crazy. He said that he would be watching TV and then say, like, who's that actor? I want to meet him. And, like, they would get him to come to his house. He said, I was shocked at how easy it was.
Wow.
Brett also said that sometimes Singer would, like, pass him around to his friends. He said that Singer would text his friends and say, I have little Brett here. Do you want to come over and do him? And all of these things were backed up, by the way, documents, with text messages, and photographs that he had.
Jesus.
So, yeah. Cool dude. So most of these stories about Singer were out there. Like, most people knew about it, but they just didn't want to talk about it. There was actually a documentary called An Open Secret that came out in 2014, and it's about child sexual abuse in Hollywood. I haven't watched it yet. Have you watched it?
I did when it came out. I don't remember everything, but I know, isn't Corey Feldman in that?
Yes, yes.
And he's been a big proponent of that, and they had a very hard time getting distribution for that movie and getting it into theaters and getting people to see it, because there's a lot of pedophiles that are in charge in Hollywood all over the place, and they don't want their bad behavior exposed. And they had, it's challenging. It's very challenging to get these creeps. There's a creep you and I really want to talk about, and people ask about him all the time, and we can't do it because it's hard to get the evidence for him. Like, the media is scared to talk about it because they can't get people to talk on the record.
This is the same, like, all the stuff that you're hearing now about the Harvey Weinstein story is going on with the Brian Singer story back in the, like, before this, obviously. But, like, there's a lot more. There's so much more. And people are still, like, they're too afraid. And these people are very powerful and they want to keep their jobs. And it's really sad. So An Open Secret is out there. But like you said, it had a lot of trouble getting distribution. Author Brett Easton Ellis, he's a creep too, but he alleged that two of his former partners went to underage sex parties hosted by Singer and fellow director Roland Emmerich. I believe he did Independence Day and like the Godzilla movies and stuff. A London-based director named Duncan Roy, I linked to his blog in the show notes, said that he's known Singer for more than 20 years. Described the director's, quote, boy obsessions and sex tourism, his use of prescription drugs, and his drinking. And it's all in, like, a 2014 blog post that I linked to in the show notes. So when Me Too started happening in 2017, that's when the story started coming to light. And that's when it started to have a big impact on his most recent project, which was 2018's Bohemian Rhapsody, which chronicles the rise of Queen, in case you haven't seen it. But interestingly, Singer got the boot for Bohemian Rhapsody, not for all the rape, but because he didn't show up for work, FYI. And it's not the first time that happened. It's just the first time he got fired for it. In 2002, he was working on X-Men 2, and it was delayed because Singer had taken too many painkillers to do his job. In 2005, while he was directing Superman Returns, Singer showed up on the set, quote, heavily medicated, and he failed to show up on the set often enough that the executive producer had to, like, go to the Australian location to ensure that Singer could finish the movie. Singer's lawyer just says that he takes medication for back pain.
Sure, Jan.
By the way, having addiction issues doesn't make you a creep.
No.
I'm just saying it. He does have a history of not showing up on set. Anyway, back to Bohemian Rhapsody. He frequently argued with the star, Rami Malek, who played Freddie Mercury. They had pretty big fights, and Singer would then throw, like, temper tantrums. And at one point, he ripped a video monitor off a rig and slammed it on the ground. Malek complained to the studio and claimed that Singer was not present on set. He was being unreliable and unprofessional. Another actor in the movie, Tom Hollander, who plays Queen's manager, actually thought Singer was such an obnoxious prick that he actually quit the movie for a while. They had to, like, woo him back after they fired Singer. Mm. Bryan Singer disappeared for days at a time. It delayed production. On November 26, 2018, Singer abandoned the movie entirely and returned to I'm sorry, 2017. He abandoned the movie entirely and returned to Los Angeles. And then in December, Fox fired him. And then Singer issued a statement saying that he wanted to finish the film, but the studio declined his request to delay production. He said that he was missing work because of pressing health matters concerning one of his parents.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. The truth was coming out. He was starting to lose. He was taking a lot of painkillers, and he was freaking out because just 3 days after he was fired, The Hollywood Reporter had a big story about a Seattle man named Cesar Sanchez Guzman, who filed a lawsuit against the director alleging that Singer had raped him in 2003 when he was 17. Mm. Cesar Sanchez Guzman now is 32. He said he was introduced to Singer by a Seattle tech millionaire named Lester Waters. I don't know who Lester Waters is. But apparently he would throw really big parties at his mansion. It would be filled with like 60 kids, mostly boys. And there's just tons of booze and drugs. And during a party one night, Waters invited Cesar to join him and some friends on a yacht the next day. And he went, and he said there were about 20 people on the yacht, most of them teenage boys. And while on the yacht, Bryan Singer was there, and he forced Cesar to the floor, shoved Caesar's face into his crotch, demanded Cesar perform oral sex on him, pulled out his penis, smacked Cesar in the face with it, forced it into Caesar's mouth. Then he forcibly, anally raped him. After it happened, Cesar Sanchez Guzman found Waters and told him, like, this just happened to me. And that Waters laughed at him and told him he should feel lucky.
Oh, good God.
So,
oh, these creeps. Oh,
they're such fucking creeps. I'm sorry. I know this one's getting a little long, you guys, and I'm going to keep going. We're almost done. So in 2019, Singer agreed to pay Sanchez Guzman a whopping $150,000 to resolve the allegations. What a cheapskate.
Oy.
Singer still maintains that he doesn't know Cesar Sanchez Guzman. Yeah, sure. Because who doesn't pay off people they don't know?
Right.
So why the low amount? The Atlantic article claims that his lawsuit was stalled because Singer's legal team reported Sanchez Guzman to the Internal Revenue Service and to U.S. Immigration. And apparently they were threatening, like, to deport his wife and things like that.
God's
so
sakes.
I know it's really dirty. So he accepted a low payment just to, like, get it over with, basically. All of these stories are out there. So since the allegations came out, a bunch of students at the University of Southern California signed a petition asking the school to take Singer's name off one of its programs, which they did. Also, Bryan Singer was forced to drop out of remaking Red Sonja. The redheaded Sonjas around the world are most grateful for that, including myself. And that's our creep, Bryan Singer. Like I said, I highly recommend reading the Atlantic article. It's in the show notes. It's really, really well done. He's just such a creep, and it just went on for so long.
Yeah.
And I'm glad it's finally out there. And then if you do a little bit of Googling, there's still like, is there redemption for Bryan Singer? And maybe Bryan Singer could come back. And I'm like, hard fucking pass.
Yeah, no, I'm hard not supporting pass. His work. I'm not supporting his work. That's ridiculous. That's
no.
Unbelievable. He should be in jail, quite frankly.
He should be in jail. And honestly, like, we can get other people to direct X-Men movies. It's fine.
Yeah, it's like he fails upward, like a lot of these people.
Yeah, we don't need Bryan Singer.
No.
So hard fucking pass. Bryan Singer's a creep.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I once again, I think I need a Silkwood shower to get over that story. So let me take a sip of coffee and we'll talk about someone who's not a creep. What do you think?
I'm into it.
Our non-creep today is Ava Marie DuVernay, and she is an African-American filmmaker and film distributor, and she's just such a cool chick, Sonia. I mean, I feel like she and I are around the same age, and she had the life I probably would have had if I had moved to Los Angeles instead of New York. Like, I had a moment when I graduated college and in the mid-90s, and I was going to go either to L.A. or New York. I went to San Jose State. Shout out to the San Jose State. And I went to New York and not Los Angeles. She stayed in Los Angeles. She went to UCLA. She's from Long Beach, California. She's a California girl. And she was actually working on as an intern in news at the O.J. trial, O.J. Simpson trial.
Oh,
yeah. And
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I didn't either. And she just didn't like news. That just wasn't where she was going to go. So she started working in public relations, and she started working for all these big PR agencies. And she worked for 20th Century Fox and Savoy Pictures. She worked in PR for really cool films. And then in 1999, she went out on her own and had her own PR agency called DuVernay Agency, DVA PR. And I remember this in New York. And like, I was like, I wish they were based here. I'd love to work for this company, because she worked on really cool stories. And she did that for a few years, but she always in the back of her head had the idea that she wanted to be a filmmaker. And so one year she took $6,000. And she made a little 12-minute movie. It premiered on Showtime's Black Filmmakers Showcase. She created some other films. One was called I Will Follow. Roger Ebert gave it a really good review. He said it's one of the best films I've ever seen. I'm reading this from Wikipedia. Coming to Terms with the Death of a Loved One. She was in Sundance. She's the first woman, 2012, her second feature. She became the first woman to win the big award at Sundance Film Festival.
First of all, that's some bullshit.
Well,
that's ridiculous.
That it took that long, as you're saying.
She,
yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. No, not that she, that's some bullshit that she won that award. I saw all the movies enter. No, that it's like Sundance has been going on since the 80s, and she's the second woman to win the top prize. Is in 2012.
She
That's
was
ridiculous.
She was the first one, Sonia, in 2012. It was her second movie.
Fuck. It's even worse than I thought.
And this is like, if you guys aren't familiar, like Sundance, especially when it started, was supposed to be all about indie people and people on the margins and all this stuff. And then, of course, in the 90s, fucking Harvey Weinstein and Miramax, they go in there and they would buy movies like crazy, and it turned into this really big Hollywood thing. And then the popularity of it kind of went downhill. It's going back up again. But yeah, I mean, I think that's total bullshit. She directed, I also co-host a podcast called Book versus Movie, and we talked about this, A Wrinkle in Time. Mm-hmm. She was the director for that. It was a movie that had a $150 million budget. She's the first African-American woman to direct a picture with that big of a budget. And she also wrote, and I don't know if you saw this, but it was on Netflix. It was called When They See Us.
Yeah.
And it's a documentary.
I haven't seen it yet, but I know the story, but I haven't watched the show yet.
It's tough because it's based on the 1989 Central Park jogger case. A woman was jogging in Central Park, And she was found unconscious and barely living. And there was African-American boys that were put on trial. And it was that I remember this because I was living on the East Coast for a little while when this was happening. It was in the papers every day that, these kids were wilding. And she was a mm-hmm. victim of that. She didn't remember anything, by the way, the jogger. These boys, when they see us, and just the lack of due process that they were given, and they were in jail for years and years and years, and were recently released because the DNA evidence didn't match up. And it's a tough story.
Yeah.
It's something you should watch. And it's like the performances are fantastic. And she's just she does speak to a lot of African-American issues and history moments, such as Selma. She directed that, which is about Martin Luther King. 13th, mm-hmm. which is about prisons. And
the 13th is amazing.
Yes.
Everybody should see that. It is about mass incarceration and it's so well done. It's super interesting. Everybody should watch it.
She was nominated for an Academy Award for that. She won the Peabody Award for that. And she's done television. She's done music videos, advertising. So anyway, yes, I mean, she's just directed so many incredible things. She's a part of so many projects. She's supposedly dating Common, which I think is really cool. And she, yes.
I love him.
He's amazing.
Oh my God, what a power couple.
Exactly. Oh, no, and she was named one of PETA's, I know I'm not the biggest fan of PETA, but you'll love this, that one of the most beautiful celebrities of the year, because she's a vegan, and you're a vegan, so.
Aw.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. I love her even more now. And she is on fire on Twitter. She's fire on Twitter.
She's just incredible.
Everyone should follow her.
So that's our non-creep this week is Ava DuVernay. You guys check out her work. She's inspiring. She's incredible. And she just speaks to live the life that you want. And if you want to do something different and new, go for it. Who cares? You know, you never know what's going to happen. I mean, this is a woman, like I said, she had a little PR agency when she worked on movies. And she says, you know what? I want to direct movies. I don't want to just do that anymore. So good for her. So that's our non-creep this week, Ava DuVernay.
We need more like her. Please.
We certainly do. So you guys, that's it for this week. And I also want to tell you, if you were requesting stickers, they are going in the mail this week. Sorry for the delay, but they are going out this week. And you can find What a Creep wherever you get your podcast. Be sure to subscribe. That way you'll never miss an episode. You can find me on social media at Brooklyn Fitchick. That's for Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. My blog is brooklynfitchick.com. And Sonia, where can they find you?
You can find me at thesoniashow.com and The Sonia Show on Twitter. And you can find both of us also on dorkingout.com. That is our other podcast where we talk about movies from the 70s, 80s, 90s, things like that. And we have some really fun ones coming up. We're going to do some romantic movies for Valentine's Day. We've got our Oscar Hate Watch coming up. It's going to be really fun. So listen.
And we'll be back next week with a new creep. He's going to be a sports creep, a sports/business creep. Ah, who will we be talking about? You'll find out next week. And guys, thanks so much. And in the meantime, don't be a creep.
Thank you for listening to us talk about creeps. You can follow us at What a Creep Podcast on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
But don't follow us too closely.
You can email us your creepy stories at whatacreeppodcast@gmail.com.
But please keep your dick pics to yourself.